Ever catch yourself thinking, I could do this on my own? If you're a safety officer with real-world skills, you don't have to wait for permission to build your freedom. On Saturday, January 31st, I'm hosting Safety Consultant 101, a free live workshop. In 2 hours, I'll help you package your expertise into a service clients will pay for and set pricing boundaries so you don't get stuck doing free advice forever. Register now at safetyconsultant101.com. Let's build your freedom.
And it's Jim Poulsel with Safety Wars. So yesterday was Eastern Orthodox Christmas, right? January 7th. So because of the way the calendars are and, East Western Europe uses one in the church and Eastern Europe uses the other, So a happy belated Christmas to our cousins. Right, our Christian cousins in the Eastern Orthodox world there. And what a day it was in the news. Something that we've always wanted, and it's patriotic because I'm wearing the Safety Wars. If you can see it on the camera, I'm wearing the Safety Wars 2026. 250th anniversary jersey here, right? Red, white, and blue. Oh, well, black, red, white, and blue, right? We're patriotic this year. My wife and I were talking about this, but today on, what are we going to do for July 4th? And I said, don't put those Christmas ornaments away, meaning the lights, because they're probably going to be, red, white, and blue for, right, we'll have red, white, and blue lights on the house. But what happened today? Well, two major developments here, and we're going to be going over them on today's Safety Wars. One of them was a presidential memoranda today, and two of them, actually, on withdrawing from certain international organizations. This came out like literally at 6 o'clock news. Right, so I'm going to be looking at those. And the other one was President Trump announces plans to ban institutional investors from buying single-family homes. That is going to have a major impact on everything here. So that's where we are. That's where we're starting at on today's Safety Wars. And I can't get this camera straight here today. But anyway, that's what we're doing. So and we're going to go back, and here's our intro. Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Anyway, here we are with Safety Wars. No music intro today, right? With that. I tell you what, today is, I'm in a state of shock. So, we mentioned one time here, this book, right? Right here, called Emergency Sex, and it's not what you think, right? And Other Desperate Measures. Let's see if I can get the share screen on here. This is from Thrift Books. This is a little bit of an older book here. I feel old. It's like 25 years old here. And this is a book by Kenneth Kane, Heidi Postlewaite, and Andrew Thompson. Right? So it's an expose. It takes place in 1990. It's a true story, not based on a truth. These are people who were actually did, you know, or were actually in the UN doing work. So here is the overview. It's the early 1990s, and three young people are looking to change their lives, and perhaps also the world. Attracted to the ambitious goal, peacekeeping work of the UN, Andrew, Kent, and Heidi's paths cross in Cambodia, from where their fates are to become inextricably bound. Over the coming years, their stories interweave through countries such as Rwanda, Bosnia, Somalia, and Haiti, war-torn, lawless places where the intervention of the UN is needed like nowhere else. Driven by idealism, the three struggled to do the best they can, caught up in an increasingly tangled web of bureaucracy and ineffectual leadership. As disillusion sets in, they attempt to keep hold of their humanity through black humor, revelry, and quote-unquote emergency sex. Brutal and moving in equal measure, emergency sex and other desperate measures explores pressing global issues while never losing a sense of the personal. Deeply critical of the West's indifference to the developing countries and the UN's repeated failure to intervene decisively, the book provoked massive controversy on its initial publication. Kofi Annan, who was the president of the UN, called for the book to be banned, right? That, you know, to be banned, of course. Banned books. Why are we surprised that these people, I'm sorry, they are biased towards socialism and communism. Why are we surprised that they called for banned books? And debate was sparked about the future direction of the UN. Brilliantly written and wordedly funny, it is a book that continues to make waves. So go and pick it up, right, if you can. Here, I'll give a plug for the book. And, you know, you can, right, this is from Thrift Books, but it could be from another one. So ever since I read that book, people have made jokes over the years. No, oh, John versus society, get us out of the UN. And there was even on MASH, where one of the characters, Major Frank Burns, played by Larry Linville, had this whole thing of, get us out of the UN and all this other stuff. And we're always taught UN, UN, UN. Blah, 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 blah. And believe it or not, it's one thing I have against Star Trek here is this kind of stuff. How wonderful it is. And I said, we got to get the hell out of this thing. We have to, you know, all of the countries have to contribute. But I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater here because they do some good work. There is some good work here. However, after reading this book and, reading other exposés, there's a lot out there and how there's often rampant anti-Semitism in the UN and everything else that goes on that needs massive reform. And perhaps today, though, is the day where people are going to go and say, holy guvno, we're going to, we got to reform the UN and the way that they're doing things. Because today, this actually just came out today, this afternoon. I'm driving home or driving back to the hotel room in my case, and I find this out. Memorandum for the heads of executive departments and agencies. So this is a presidential memorandum. This is from whitehouse.gov, January 7th. Which was yesterday, 2026, but, it takes a day to get on the website. By the authority vested in me as president of the president by the Constitution laws of the U.S., I hereby direct on February 4th, Section 1, Purpose, A, on February 4th, because you're going to hear a lot of stuff about this. This hasn't really hit the news. You're going to hear a lot of stuff about this. I issued Executive Order 14199, withdrawing the United States from ending funding to certain UN organizations and reviewing the United States' support to all UN organizations. That executive order, directed by the Secretary of State in consultation with the U.S. representative to the United Nations, to conduct a review of all international intergovernmental organizations of which the United States is a member and provides any type of funding or other support. and all conventions and treaties to which the U.S. is a party to determine which organizations, conventions, and treaties are contrary to the interests of the U.S. The Secretary of State has reported his findings as required by Executive Order 14199. Now, let me give you a little bit more context here. I was mentored for a 10-year period by Alan Keyes. And you say, well, Alan Keyes, blah, 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 you know, look him up. He was one of the ambassadors to the United Nations under Ronald Reagan. That's the ambassador, right? He has a lot of, you know, like all people, you know, you agree with him on some stuff, you don't agree with him on other stuff. But I had very long conversations with him over the course of about 2 years. And one of the things that he brought up, not one time, but multiple times, was that when we go to the UN and we start to debate and we start to negotiate and everything else, the United States has a habit of saying, right, so this is, now you're on camera, I have my hands apart. So on my left hand, or your right hand on camera, right, that's you're the other party. And on my right hand, or your left, is the United States. So you negotiate, and you come to a compromise. And you're supposed to meet, and my hands are moving close, and you're supposed to meet in the middle somewhere. Correct? That's how the negotiation happens, where one side gives a little bit, the other side gives a little bit. Go like it, go watch A Beautiful Mind, Russell Crowe, John Nash, Game Theory. All right? So both sides reach a compromise, and there's what we call Nash equilibrium. All right? Game Theory. That's more complicated, but that's like oversimplified. I get it. Now, what the United States does is this. This is the United States. This is the other. My hands are apart. The United States goes here and then says, well, let's compromise, right? This is their point of view all the way out here. And this is the other point of view all the way out here. United States starts from the middle and then works its way further to the other side. So rather than a 50-50 compromise, what do you get? And maybe it's not exactly 50-50, but it's close, 50-50. You get 75% for the other person, or in the case of the United Nations, and he was an ambassador, he should know, negotiating these things, the United States automatically would go to 90% to the other side, 75% to the other side consistently. So what happened is we get unfair deals. We get deals favoring everybody else against the United States issue, the United States point of view. All right? That's the point of view. This book, Emergency Sex, backs this up. And basically, it's made the United Nations out to be a social club. So that's basically it. So at a point, we have to change. And now with the way us being, I don't know, what is it, $30 trillion in debt? After the COVID stuff with the World Health Organization and everything, we should be evaluating this stuff. Like I've been saying for the last 6 months, maybe. We got to evaluate, we got to question every one of these freaking things. What are we doing? Why are we doing this? Because the other organizations in the other countries are doing this, looking out for themselves. We got to start to look a little bit more in our favor with our stuff and our self-interest. So, B, I have considered the Secretary of State's report and after deliberating with my cabinet, have determined that it is contrary to the interests of the U.S. to remain a member of, participate in, or otherwise provide support to the organizations listed in Section 2 of this memorandum. right? Consistent with Executive Order 14199 and pursuant to the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and laws of the United States, I hereby direct all executive departments and agencies to take immediate steps to effectuate the withdrawal of the United States from organizations listed in Section 2 of this memorandum as soon as possible. For United Nations entities, withdrawals mean ceasing participation in or funding to those entities to the extent permitted by law. My review of further findings of the Secretary of State remains ongoing. Section 2. Organizations from which the U.S. shall withdraw. Non-United Nations organizations. So these have nothing to do with the United Nations. So these are non-United Nations organizations. 24/7 Carbon-Free Energy Compact. Colombo Plan Council. Commission, I hope fans of Colombo aren't going to be upset on that one. Commission for Environmental Cooperation. Education cannot wait. European Center of Excellence for Countering Hybrid Threats. Forum of European National Highway Research Laboratories. Freedom Online Coalition. Global Community Engagement and Resilience Fund. Global Counterterrorism Forum. Global Forum on Cyber Expertise, Global Forum on Migration and Development, Inter-American Institute for Global Change Research, Intergovernmental Forum on Mining, Minerals, Metals, and Sustainable Development, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That's a major one there on that. Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, those reports and everything that are yay thick that I read for my master's project. All of them, where it's basically the ones that I read from 2001 were cherry-picked by the news media and say, look, this book, it was like reading the Bible. Look at this book, and it's like literally, memory serves to write something like 3,000 pages in total, the whole thing, and they only read the first 20 pages, summary for policymakers, which may or may not reflect what's in the actual report. So that's what happened then. They were caught. They were called on it. We have had guests here, Lord Christopher Monckton from England and James Taylor from the Heartland Institute have all discussed this stuff and other guests on here going a couple years back on there. So that's a big one. Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change on there. Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecoservices. International Center for the Study of Preservation and Restoration of Cultural Property. International Cotton Advisory Committee. International Developmental Law Organization. International Energy Forum. International Federation of Arts, Councils, and Cultural Agencies. And the list goes on and on. Renewable Energy Policy Network. Science and Technology Center in Ukraine. Venice Commission of the Council of Europe. Now, here's one from the United Nations organizations. Department of Economic and Social Affairs. UN Economic Social Council. Anything? International Law Commission. International Residual Mechanism for Criminal Tribunals. International Trade Center. And it goes on and on and on. The Peacekeeping Fund, Peacekeeping Initiative. UN Energy. UN Entity for Gender Equality and Power of Women. My question is this. All these organizations, I believe the number is 66, what are they doing other than blowing through money? Looking good. Is your work, you know, what happens to an organization, all right? And there is one popular game, primarily played by older women, that I had a friend working for them who was their secretary for many years. And it basically was a slush fund for one family. All right. And you had to buy rules to the game every year. They change. So you could go and you could figure out who that is, probably. And a slush fund. How many of these are slush funds? Right? Here we go, the UN Population Fund. We've detailed in detail the demographic crisis a lot of countries, including the United States and Western Europe, are going through, and now Eastern Europe, are going through. Here we have a population reduction thing, but it always focuses on the West, not the developing world. UN Register of Conventional Arms. UN Water, UN University. Right? So I don't know how much money we're going to spend here, but maybe, perhaps, we'll get back in when they reform. Because a lot of these things, they did some good. We can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we've been funding a lot of this stuff, and based on my research and that book and stories and everything else, they want to be integrated in everything, including land use planning in the United States. There are exposés written on that immensely about 15 years ago. Why do we have certain land use policies? Because of UN commissions. That are, and by the way, you don't believe me? You don't believe me? Okay. Listen to Mayor Zohan Mamdani and his speech and what his opinion is on property rights. Right? And his inaugural speech, and everybody out there clapping. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? Capitalism is hard, but socialism is warm. It's warm. Okay. Maybe you could have told that how wonderful socialism and communism were, right? Tell that to my mother who almost freaking froze to death under communism during World War II, right? After when she was expatriated. Tell that to my mother, how wonderful it was. So this is one great thing here with this. Perhaps it'll spawn these people to reform on this, perhaps. All right? I got to put a warning, you know, political content at the on the beginning of this. But I tell you what, I don't agree. Am I a MAGA? No, I'm not MAGA. However, when someone, and again, Biden made some good decisions there, like when he raised a bounty on Maduro in Venezuela, the $25 million, up from what Trump had of that when he changed it. The problem with him, with Biden, was that they didn't execute the court orders. And by the way, there were court orders. There were indictments and warrants and things of that nature. That was what the problem was. There was no real effort to do that from based on publicly available information. So that was number one. Number two was this. President Trump announced his plans to ban institutional investors from buying single-family homes. This was from the White House Wire that links to another article on Fox News, but I'm sure there are other ones out there. Trump announced his plans to ban institutional investors from buying single-family homes. Trump looks to ban large financial institutions, right? Now you're going to say, well, what's the problem? So based on some interviews I heard this afternoon, what the apparently is this, a lot of the affordability crisis out there that we have in our society is because large companies are buying houses, single family homes, and jacking the price up, either for whatever reason. Right. For a very long time, buying and owning a home was considered the pinnacle of the American dream. It was a reward for hard and working hard and doing the right thing. But now, because of the record high inflation caused by the previous administration and Congress, that American dream is increasingly out of touch for far too many people. It's for that reason, much more, that I'm immediately taking steps to ban large institutional investors from buying more single-family homes, and I will be calling on Congress to codify it. The president added that he will discuss this topic, including further housing and affordability proposals and more, at my speech in Davos in 2 weeks. Thing there. When I was 13 or 12, almost 13, my parents took me on vacation in the summer to Davos at the Hotel Belvedere, and my mom and dad were laughing. It's like, you see, all of this stuff comes from Davos, from the Hotel Belvedere, and you were there. So, large financial institutions like Blackstone have purchased thousands of single-family homes since the 2008 financial crisis, spurred by a wave of home foreclosures. Firms are increasingly investing in rental homes, which has outperformed other commercial property sectors, like offices and retail in recent years and amid rising borrowing costs. Housing advocates and lawmakers, including Democrats, have criticized institutional landlords as having constrained the housing supply and increased rental costs for Americans. It's unclear what legal authorities the president will cite in his push to ban institutional firms from buying homes, or what additional measures he's pushing for Congress to take. So he's apparently doing this on executive action or executive order, but it's unclear whether he could legally do this here. So something to think, something to think about here. So let's see if we can get the other point of view here, right? I am, yes, I had issues this afternoon with axe investigation. So, boom, boom. So this is from Trump, New York Times. Trump wants to bar Wall Street investors from buying single-family homes on here. And believe me, New York Times, is not, they're not fans of Trump. All right. President Trump said he wanted Congress to take immediate steps to stop private equity firms and other large investors from buying this stuff, right? His post contained a few details, though Mr. Trump promised to say more about his plans during a speech in Davos. The proposed ban is Mr. Trump's latest attempt to try to address housing affordability for average Americans as he faces mounting political pressure to address cost of living issues from home prices to grocery bills. Voters' unhappiness with pocketbook issues is likely to be a major force in the upcoming midterm elections. The effect of such restriction on the broader housing market, however, could be limited. Small investors make up the vast majority of owners of single-family rental properties. It's estimated institutional firms only own about 4% of the single-family home rental properties in the country. The president's call for legislative action similar to measures introduced in Congress in recent years that would have limited hedge funds and other institutional investors from buying a large number of homes to operate as rentals. So these are rental homes, right? Anyway, it's been the backbone of a lot of investigations. So I don't know. We'll see how this works out here. I know that there were homes in my old neighborhood of Chestnut Ridge, New York, that fell into this category, and they just laid vacant up until recently, and I've been out of there going on 9 years. So that's what's going on. So I know that's political, and you may or may not agree, which is fine, but we absolutely need to start reforming, and we need to start asking, because this is what happens. It's sort of like when you're, it's sort of like they have that commercial where you, that's for that organization where you have all these apps that you buy for the phone or on the phone, or you have like multiple streaming services and you don't realize it and you're paying for them, and that's like $2 a month. But, you know, $2 for this, $3 for this, $10 for this, before you know it, you spend $300 a month on a whole bunch of stuff that you're not using. Sort of like the same idea with the UN. And again, question everything. Make sure you question everything. And we're going to go and to commercial break, and I will get back to you in a little bit here. So, is your safety chain old?
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Polzel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
Steady, can't let it choke. Don't rock the safety boat. Keep it smooth, keep it afloat. Dance all night, but don't provoke. Don't rock the safety boat. Don't rock the safety boat. Feet tapping fast, dicks getting slick. Flashing shadows play their tricks. Hold the line, baby, don't let it split. One wrong move and we're in the thick. Ooh, ooh. Steady hand, steady heart. Don't let the rhythm fall apart. Don't rock the safety boat. Keep it smooth, keep it afloat. The safety boat.
Is there a safety training?
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Polzel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
So here we are back with our regular stuff here. Oh, sorry for the politics. I'm not sorry. I mean, we are being manipulated like you would not believe, or maybe you would believe. Here we have this whole thing going on in Minnesota with the police shooting, or the ICE shooting a person. And I'm not going to go into he said, she said, this one, that one. Just go and watch the video from all points of view. As I have said numerous times, the people who are riling everybody up to do different stuff, it happens on the right, it happens on the left. But right now, the focus has been on the left. people that riled people up to do stuff, and remember, it was the anniversary of January 6th, are not the people paying the price for when things go bad. Now, this person who was shot and killed, Renee Good, rest in peace. I don't know what her context is. There has to be an investigation. Why was she there? Did somebody rile her up? We're going to go out there and we're going to be whatever. We're going to save the day for whatever issue it was, whatever mind. The person who, a group who riled her up did not, those people are not out there. They're not paying the price. Now we have a spouse and child, at least one child on here from what I recall, who are being impacted by this, and the rest of the family and a whole community. And when you find out that reportedly a similar situation without a fatality, thank God, has happened over 100 times with people trying to run people down with a car, I don't know if that's what happened here or not. I don't know. There needs to be an investigation. And this person, this agent, was reportedly run over as of today, Thursday, January 8th. He was reportedly run over in the past. All right. How do you expect people to do that? There's got to be somebody who says, look, we got to calm this down and have negotiations. We got to calm this down and have more dialogue, have better conversations, and everything else. There has to be someone there doing that. I don't know who that is. Is there one leader out there that can do that? Let's come to an hey, let's try to negotiate. Because right now, nobody is negotiating. All the federal government is doing is is enforcing the law as written, to the letter. As we pointed out on Tuesday with the EPA website, where they said, we filled our statutory requirements to do our five-year annual review on these, I believe it was 32 things. They're just, he ran on law and order, so he is enforcing the law. So what has to happen is Congress has to change the law. Or what are you going to do, sue everybody? By the way, the courts have very little jurisdiction when Congress passes a law and the president enforces it. Very, very little thing the courts could do. What are they going to say? Break the law? What they could say is, Supreme Court, constitutional or not constitutional, how long is that going to take? And the thing is, just like with what we started out here with the UN, what the hell are these organizations doing? What the hell is Congress doing where we've had Republican Congresses? We've had Democratic Congresses. What are they doing here? They've known since 1986 that these immigration laws had to be changed. They've known it. It's part of the 1986 budget deal. We're going on 40 years. They've known this is fouled up. Senator Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, was one of the main people involved with this stuff. They know that this stuff is fouled up. Why aren't they fixing it? And why aren't we holding the feet? Why aren't we holding the feet to the fire? People are more concerned with this, right? Having their fun and everything else. And the people who are aware of this do not hit compelling arguments, do not have compelling arguments to distract people from this stuff. I was holding up his cell phone. So everybody take a chill pill. Find out what the hell happened and look at the video yourself, because some of the news outlets are only showing one point of view. Some news outlets are only showing any other point of view, and which adds some, right? And as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words, but my retort to that is a picture does not give you context. What is the context? You see these videos and everything of accidents and this and that, work safety professionals at work, and someone's, well, a picture. Look, Jimmy, a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, what's the context behind that? What happened 30 seconds before that picture? What happened 30 seconds after? What happened a month before that picture? What is the context we're doing? We have to ask better questions. We have to say, we can't just go along anymore. What are those questions out there? Right? Yesterday, my toolbox talk on the project I'm working, one of the projects I'm working on, was Brent Sutton's book. Right? And let me... get this up. All right, Brent Sutton, one of the friends of the program, 4 D's. Don't do anything dumb. Don't do anything dangerous. Don't do anything difficult. Don't do anything different, right? When I show up, that's what I say. We're doing good. Don't do any of those four things. Well, those are also questions. What are we doing that is dumb? What are we doing that is dangerous? What are we doing that is difficult? What are we doing, right, differently? How could we fix things? Ask better questions. I'll do a shout out for Brent. Ask better questions. Have better conversations. If you want to institute corporate change, you have to have a vision and communicate that vision. But you have to develop that vision by knowing the organization and talking to people. How do you like that? Actually talking to people. Wow, what a mind-blowing thing. Here we have another safety thing, right? This is from CNBC. It was published today. NASA to bring space station astronauts back to Earth weeks early due to medical situation. NASA will bring Crew 11 astronauts back to the ISS on Saturday, weeks earlier than previously planned, the agency announced. A medical situation with an unnamed crew member caused NASA to make the change. Right? So NASA will, again, you got to plan for this stuff. They're not saying what the medical situation is. And, you know, another crew will go and... Pick up where they left along, whatever they're in the middle of doing. Now, this is a little, right from the Daily Star. So I don't know how accurate it is, but it's all over the net today. Olympic sport rocked by, okay, get this, penis gate, as athletes inject members to gain advantage. I don't know what kind of advantage you would get with that. They have what looks like a Ozempic or an insulin syringe here, the pens, right? Auto injector here. So I don't know if that's how you deliver that or not. They say 4 or 3 images. Okay, let's click on what those are. Okay, guys, skiing. A guy over that looks like Sarajevo, right, in front of the Olympic rings. So I don't know. What is this about on that? An Olympic sport defined by length. Oh, this is a good one. In an Olympic sport defined by length, some athletes are going to new extremes to eke out an extra few inches. That's before they even jumped. This is from the Star. Who wrote this thing? Will Schofield, senior sports writer. Should win a Pulitzer Prize for this freaking thing, man. With just weeks until Winter Olympics in Italy, ski jumping has been rocked by Penisgate, with athletes allegedly thinking bigger means better by injecting their nether regions, according to German outlet Bild. The report claims 3D scanner measurements for the crotch area of their jumpsuits are taken from the lowest point of the athlete's member, meaning any extra growth could translate into a competitive advantage even before they take off. Right? As a result, when taking off, the surface area of the athlete is much larger, which increases the possibility of a better jump. I guess you're going to be sailing, right? And it's this information that has reportedly led to some athletes to inject, I'm not going to mention what it is, right? into something. They're doing. They're injecting something into that area. All right. I'm not going to mention it. God knows we'll have half the safety wars people out there doing it. Right. However, Halvor Egner Granurula, a Norwegian ski jumper, was furious at the accusations when he was approached by Dagbladet. Rune Velte, Norwegian coach, came into the locker room. That must be Dagbladet, right? You have, right, he came in and said to the before the qualifiers, you need to be prepared for questions about your penis injections. I have to admit that I thought it was nonsense. No, I've never heard of it until today. Neither have I. And now you do. We've never heard of this. When I took my measurements, I was with a doctor who examined me to make sure I did not have a fake penis. End quote, end quote. He added, I assume they are speculating about something like the body scan before the season. And it's true. It's better to be warm and comfortable than a little cold when measuring. That could be true, right? Right. Norway have already admitted to manipulating costumes at the World Cup, at a World Cup in Trondheim last year by sewing a reinforced thread in the suit, which would allow more lift in the air. The way I consider this, we have cheated, said Jan-Erik Albu, general manager of the federation. We have tried to cheat the system, and that is unacceptable. I don't know what to tell you on this. I mean, I can make all different jokes, I mean, you know, with this, but I'm going to refrain from that because there are some medications, right, that might do a better job other than what they're using here. So I don't know. I know one thing. When I was in high school, they had the sports physicals, and somebody went there. Somebody went there. Yeah, let me get the sound effect out. Somebody that went there with, let's just say he was very happy to be there, and there was a little bit of an issue there with it. We'll leave it at that, and it was not a good thing. So, but anyway, on to the safety. U.S. Department of Labor recovers more than $259 million in back wages for workers in 2025. U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division announced it has recovered more than $259 million in back wages for nearly 177,000 employees nationwide in fiscal year 2025. Here we have January 8th, yesterday, today. Federal court orders Arizona roofing contractor to pay wages and damages to 61 workers denied overtime wages. Right? USDOL has obtained a consent judgment to recover $147,000 plus in back wages and liquidated damages for 61 roofers whose employer withheld overtime wages in violation of federal law. So, again, if you have, I tell you what, I did a little bit of a deep dive on our holiday break where we really weren't broadcasting. And wouldn't you know it, I came to the conclusion after reading the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act that a lot of you safety guys out there, and gals for that matter, people, a lot of you folks are being paid, and you got to double check this, get with an attorney, get with whoever who's more qualified than me. A lot of us may not be exempt from overtime pay. We may be not exempt based on what we're told to do and how the job is managed. So, for example, if your only job is to sit in the trailer, eat donuts, and drink coffee, and fill out checklists, you may not be an exempt employee from overtime. May not. Which means you may be entitled to a whole boatload of overtime pay. If you're not using discretion I remember, well, Jim, I write AHAs or JSAs or JHAs, whatever we're calling them on that project. Well, guess what? A union foreman being paid by the hour does the same thing. So therefore, you writing a safety plan does not necessarily mean that you are a salaried employee or exempt from overtime. Doesn't it? It may not. So if I were you safety guides, I'd go out there and double check that. Right? Because you may be entitled to a boatload of money there. U.S. Department of Labor investigation finds Texas Trucking Company wrongly terminated a driver for raising safety concerns. U.S. Department of Labor has ordered Fort Worth-based trucking company, and I will mention the name here. Let me do share screen. To reinstate and compensate a worker who was terminated after reporting safety concerns in violation of the Surface Transportation Act, which protects commercial motor vehicle safety complaints. Department's OSHA ordered the company to reinstate the employee and pay back wages, interest, compensatory, and punitive damages totaling more than $100,000. So a little bit of trivia. If you are a 10-hour outreach trainer or you have taken an outreach course, have they mentioned that there are 25 whistleblower statutes that OSHA regulates? Some of them not having nothing to do with safety, right? Now, this has been the other one, and I mentioned this last week here on this show, or maybe the week before, when we had the announcement of the, here we go, Trump has announced the design of a new battleship. And this is from courtesy of the Foreign Policy Research Institute here. We're sharing them. So thank you. So these are, this is basically it. So, and the author here, Emma Salisbury, she looks like somebody I grew up with. Dead ringer there. Where they were talking, right, where... that's basically it. So it would be one big battleship. So because we do maritime training here at Safety Wars, right, give us a call, 845-269-5772. I'm doing a maritime training class towards the end of the month here for a group of people online, right? So essentially, looking, I've been following this because it's, you know, part of what we do. You know, we're going to talk about shipyards. You might as well know something to keep up with shipyard stuff. So, basically, my question a couple of weeks ago was, we have over 100 ships deficit compared to China in the Navy. We do not have the shipbuilding capacity since probably in the 70s or 80s, to catch up anytime soon. So my question was this. Are we building bigger ships because we don't have the shipbuilding capacity to build a whole bunch of smaller ships? That's my question here with this. So going back here to this, and this was actually on Fox News, Brett Baer, a special report yesterday. Right, the U.S. Department of Labor today, and this is, when was this released? This press release was today, but announced an award of nearly $14 million in funding to support the development of programs aimed at in reinvigorating and rebuilding U.S. maritime industry workforce. I'm going to point out that it is mandatory at almost all shipyards, federal shipyards, to go and have the outreach training. So give us a call, 845-269-5772. The department awarded $8 million to Delaware County Community College and $5.8 million to Massachusetts Maritime Academy to advance the next generation of American shipbuilders through hands-on cutting-edge training programs developed in conjunction with international partners. Restoring America's maritime dominance cannot be accomplished without skilled American workers, said Secretary of Labor Lori Chavez de Raymer. I love that name. In line with President Trump's executive orders, these projects will help train our next generation of shipbuilders and ensure the skills critical to revitalizing our shipbuilding industry are developed here at home. And it goes on and on with the, now we've mentioned that, and there's an executive order restoring America's maritime dominance from last year. I'm showing it here online, April 9, 2025. All right. Now, this is what the problem as I see it, right? There are people all over talk radio this morning talking about, skilled American workers, blah, blah, blah. You know why we don't have a lot of people going into the trades? And this has got to be addressed. They're talking about the oil industry. There's been an oil industry shortage on workers for several years. And it all comes down to problems that we've talked about here. One, people are injured, the skilled tradespeople. They know if they report the injury, then they're going to be out of work, missing out on that overtime, or there is a incentive for the companies not to report injuries, so they take things off, put things off the books. Now, I had discussions with some local union leaders here over the last couple of years at the ASSP event in Pomona, New York, right by where I live. And one of the things is that companies are self-medicating people, right? So giving medication to individuals rather than sending them the workers' comp or, you know, out for medical evaluation here to keep them working and hoping that they don't get caught on a drug test. So a lot of these people in these things, right, they have to take a drug test. They're not eligible to take the drug test because they're on drugs, number one. Remember, federal shipyard, federal work, federal law, number one. Number two, here, right? So they're on drugs. Why are they on drugs? Self-medicating, and the companies are often self-medicating them. So this is all works into safety here, all into the systems we have. Because why? Because the government still has its head up its rear end on a lot of these contracts. And, talking to some of our hot people out there, we know from them, is that they're on the zero accidents, zero injuries, and zero illnesses thing. And what happens? There's an incentive for companies not to report on things. And, later, one of these days, I'm going to talk about the safety clown that I had to deal with recently. So, with this, and there's incentive not to do it. It's verbal, nonverbal, intentional, non-intentional, not to report injuries. And this is all the fallout here. Part of it, why we do not have people out there with those skills, right? Because they cannot hire drug addicts. They cannot hire people who are on drugs or who are on alcohol, who are self-medicating for these jobs. They'll never get into it. That's the problem with the oil industry. One facility I know of had a 60% shortfall on workers because they couldn't do this. So for Safety Wars, and I'm all fired up tonight. I know it. This is Jim Polzel. See you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Ever catch yourself thinking, I could do this on my own? If you're a safety officer with real-world skills, you don't have to wait for permission to build your freedom. On Saturday, January 31st, I'm hosting Safety Consultant 101 a free live workshop. In 2 hours, I'll help you package your expertise into a service clients will pay for and set pricing boundaries so you don't get stuck doing free advice forever. Register now at safetyconsultant101.com. Let's build your freedom.